Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. On this episode of Healthcare Happy Hour, we are excited to be speaking with Vani Hari, also known as the Food Babe, we'll explore that in a minute, who is the keynote speaker for the upcoming NABIP annual convention in Miami Beach. Welcome, Vani.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you today?
I'm great.
So I have a question that's been on my mind since we first booked the interview, which is, how does one go from being a mere mortal to being a food babe?
Well, it was not an easy road. I grew up with two immigrant Indian parents who came here to the United States, and they were very trusting of the American food supply. And the first thing my dad introduced my mom to was a McDonald's hamburger. And he said, if we're going to live in America, we're going to eat like Americans. And this is how I was raised, on fast food, processed food. And at the same time, I was also in and out of doctor's offices looking for solutions to all my ailments as a child. I had stomach issues, eczema, asthma, severe allergies. And when my parents took me into the doctor's offices, the doctors never asked my parents, what are you feeding her? What does your typical diet look like? It was always, here's this cream, here's this pharmaceutical, here's this inhaler, here's this drug that she can take, here's a shot she can take. And it never was looking into what I was eating. And I didn't really truly understand that everything that I had been encountering was actually a result of what I was eating until I hit rock bottom in my early 20s, where I became very sick. I was overweight. I was working a very high stress job and ended up in the hospital getting my appendix taken out in my early 20s. And it was that moment that I decided to take health in my own hands and figure out what had caused my appendicitis, why I had to have an organ taken out of my body that the doctors were telling me I don't need. And I wanted to know the truth. And the first thing I realized was actually you do need your appendix. It is something that's valuable to the human body. It populates your gut with good bacteria. And I was shocked to learn that information because the doctors told me something totally different. And then I started to look into, well, what causes appendicitis? And it was the inflammation of my digestive system from eating inflammatory foods. And I asked myself, okay, well, what's an inflammatory food? And so I started to research and discover that everything I'd been eating for most of my life was an inflammatory food. And when I shifted from a packaged processed fast food diet to a more real whole foods diet, which I learned through just studying different books about nutrition and how to get vitamins and minerals back in your body and how do you get the most nutrient-dense foods in your diet, I realized a level of health that I never thought was possible. Suddenly, I went off every single prescription drug. I was looking different. The weight came off. I started to feel better. I had this new sense of energy that I'd never felt in my body. And it was truly a life-changing few years of getting to that moment. And that is when my friends and my family members and my coworkers started to ask me, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing that's different? Because you look great and you're glowing and, you know, you're eating different. And why are you bringing your food with you everywhere? And why are you asking the waiters and waitresses specific questions about your food? And what are you learning? And I started to live this very unconventional lifestyle in a conventional world, in this, you know, corporate environment with, you know, surrounded by cubicles and people eating a lot of fast food and not questioning what they were eating. And I was questioning it. And so they, you know, my friends, I remember I went away for a weekend with them and they convinced me to start the blog Food Babe. And at first I wanted to call it eathealthylivforever.com. And my husband, who's the tech geek in the family, thought that was a terrible name. And so he bought Food Babe for $10 on auction and said, hey, you know, how about Food Babe? because it was easy to remember, short and sweet. And I remember feeling a little bit uneasy about using that name initially because it was something that, you know, I didn't feel for most of my life. I never felt like a food babe. And so I said, well, why don't I teach people how to become a food babe? And so for the first year and a half of the blog, I never even had my photo on the header. It was these cartoon characters. And I kind of hid behind this persona of food babe because I'm still working in the corporate world, working for C-level executives at big banking institutions. And so I started blogging and just sharing, you know, what I was finding out about health and food and ways that I had felt duped by the food industry, thinking something was healthy when it wasn't. And, you know, one of the first investigations that I wrote about that went viral was when I took on Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A had close to a little bit over, I think, 100 ingredients in their Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich. And I labeled, you know, I titled the blog post Chemical Filet or Chick-fil-A because there were more chemicals in it than chicken. And that blog post went so viral that the executive leadership at Chick-fil-A learned about it and invited me to their headquarters. And suddenly I was taking off work at the corp, you know, at the financial institutions to now go consult with the food companies. And it was that moment and other moments like that that eventually convinced me to quit my financial consulting career and become a food activist full time.
Well, you're a Southern gal.
Yep.
And Chick-fil-A is a religion in the South.
Oh, I mean, I ate it every day. I mean, growing up, it was the one thing we would get at the mall when my parents would take me there. We would go to Chick-fil-A first. We wouldn't go anywhere else in the food court. It would be Chick-fil-A. I ate it almost every day in college. We had a Chick-fil-A on campus. So, yeah, I grew. It was a religion to me, too. I mean, I even to this day, I haven't had it in more than 15 years. Even to this day, when I think about a Chick-fil-A sandwich, my mouth waters because of the MSG that they use in one of the first ingredients in a Chick-fil-A sandwich. Even today, they still use that. And it's that MSG that actually makes your brain spark and remember that flavor and start to crave that flavor and start to kind of take over your olfactory system in your body and in your senses to want you to stop for a Chick-fil-A sandwich. And I tell you, it was one of the hardest things I had to give up.
I'll bet they're very addictive. So what was that meeting? What was that first meeting like at Chick-fil-A? And was that when the notion occurred to you that you could go from being a YouTuber or a blogger to moving the needle in a big old industry?
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, that day they rolled out the red carpet. They picked me up in a cowmobile, cow-wrapped car. And I remember, you know, going into their headquarters and in the headquarters right at the in the lobby is the Batmobile. Apparently, you know, Truett Cathy, who had started Chick-fil-A, was very, you know, avid Batman fan and bought the Batmobile and it was in there. It was quite entertaining to see that. And then, you know, they took me on a beautiful tour of their facility and their kitchen, and I got to see how things were made, and that was really cool. And then I guess the most important part was when they sat me down in a boardroom with all of their key leadership, and they had me whiteboard out all of my complaints about Chick-fil-A and what needed to change and prioritize that for them. And I remember that day, it was the fact that they raised their chickens with antibiotics, which was my top concern because of, you know, I had met the former general of the U.S. Army, General Wesley Clark, at a political event recently. And I had asked him, I said, what's the most pressing food issue of our time? And he says, you know, the overuse of antibiotics, because if we overuse them and we can't use them to prevent disease, then it could wipe out the human race. And I thought, wow, that is a really important thing to figure out. And so I asked them, I said, you know, you need to start raising your chickens without the use of antibiotics. And they said, well, there's not enough supply. There's not enough chicken farmers to do this. They gave me a lot of excuses. I said, you got to do what Chipotle is doing and others are doing, which is converting their supply from within. And you buy enough chicken and you have enough chicken that you could start to do that. And so that's actually what they ended up doing, which was incredible. They had made the commitment within 2 years. And and started to make that push and that change. So I would say that was one of the most significant things that happened as a result of that meeting. But they also removed artificial food dyes, which was, you know, 10 years ago now, over 10 years ago. And so they were one of the first to do that. And so even though their sandwich is far from perfect today, it has a lot less chemicals, has about 55 compared to the 100 that it did.
Wow. That's significant.
Yeah. So
we have a lot of members in our industry, the folks you're going to be chatting with in Miami Beach, who are amazing folks and who are big into creative destruction right now. They know that the old models haven't worked and that they need to speak up and talk about new models, both amongst themselves, which they'll be doing at the meeting, and also to the employers they serve. How do you navigate the line between being a passionate advocate and being perceived as polarizing? Because, you know, somebody once said that the way you can tell the pioneers from the settlers is the pioneers are the ones with the arrows sticking out of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, I feel like I'm a messenger for truth and a messenger for change. And, you know, we've had so much chronic disease in this country where, you know, 38% of kids are getting diagnosed with prediabetes. That is unheard of. This used to be zero. We have rising rates of cancer. You know, the amount of exposure we have to the chemicals in our food and in our environment has increased dramatically. For example, you know, Americans have 500 times more exposure of glyphosate, a chemical that's used on our farmland here in the United States, than other countries in Europe. But then when you look at our health statistics compared to those countries, we're at the bottom and they're at the top. But we spend the most on healthcare. And so we've got to look at the root cause of why we are so sick. And when I think about my own story and how I went from someone on a processed, you know, ultra processed food diet to someone eating real whole foods and making that a priority, what can happen? You can go off 9 prescription drugs. You can realize a life that you never thought was possible. I don't think I would have ever found my calling or really been successful in life had I not figured out how to get my body healthy, because I don't think my brain was actually working to its fullest extent. I don't think I would have been able to change, you know, dozens of billion-dollar food corporations in my work that I have had I not been truly healthy. And I think every American has that potential to be truly healthy. And then they unlock why they're meant to be here on Earth, and then they're able to go live their life's purpose. So there's a higher spiritual meaning about eating well and healthy, too, that, you know, I wish to communicate as well. And I think the way I get people into this space is to give them information that they can't unlearn, information that they can't look away. They can't think about, for example, a Subway sandwich without thinking about a yoga mat and shoe rubber anymore, because there used to be a chemical in it called azodicarbonamide that was also in shoe rubbers and yoga mats. But when I made that connection for people, it was, oh my gosh, it's not eating fresh. I thought I was eating fresh when I was eating at Subway. Now I'm eating yoga mat chemicals. What? You know, I thought they baked the bread fresh every day, Molly. I see it in the ovens, but it's a chemical experiment that's being shipped across the United States, you know, frozen or even in a dough that they mix on site and they stick into the ovens. And it's not what you think it is. And so giving people the truth about what's truly in our food supply, I think will empower people and empower industries to make better choices and to figure out how to give the American people more real food. And you know, my company, Truvani, that I started, you know, 7 years ago was created to show that you can create products and leave these unnecessary chemicals behind, that you don't need to expose yourself to chemicals that are banned in other countries and linked to health issues, that you can create products that are tasty and delicious and suit your human needs without being exposed to these chemicals.
Only foods that you can find in your kitchen.
That's right.
Which is something I read on one of your bars. So
yes,
it's, yeah, you know, it's important. So if there was one most misleading term that consumers should be on the lookout for today, what would that be?
natural, you know, you using the word natural. When you look at products and they say natural, they could have genetically engineered ingredients that are designed to withstand heavy doses of these chemical pesticides that are linked to infertility and cancer and autoimmune disorders and other issues. The word natural is used with flavoring, and it's in, I would say, 90% of the products on grocery store shelves have some kind of flavoring added to them, either natural or artificial, but mostly natural flavor because it sounds more, you know, innocuous. And so natural flavor is actually can contain thousands of chemicals that trick your brain into remembering a flavor, and it acts similar to MSG in that it's designed to kind of take over your senses. And this is one of the reasons why PepsiCo has a robot that mimics human taste buds so that they can design their products to be addictive. And what I want to ask is, you know, how do humans even stand a chance against that kind of technology? And this is why going back to real food is so important, and unadulterated food by the food industry. Because if we allow these corporations, which they only have really one goal in mind, many of the big ones have one goal in mind, which is to profits over people and to make more money. You know, if we're outsourcing our health to them because we're eating their food, you know, what are we getting back in return? And so we have to really question where we get our food from. And this is why I think it's so important to grow your own food, why it's so important to go to the farmer's market and support your local farmer, because you're going to be getting food that's less processed, more nutritious, and you're not going to find yourself a victim to all of the chronic diseases that are a result of eating ultra-processed food. I mean, 70% of a child's diet in America is ultra-processed. That is horrific to think about.
Is it, for lack of a better word, sinister, or just to create shelf stability so that products can ship and sit on shelves forever, or a combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's the result of capitalism, right? And it's for shelf life. It's for emulsification, if you will, like keeping the product together so it doesn't fall apart.
Like palm oil and peanut butter.
Yeah, the palm oil and peanut butter, or the emulsifier that was created when trans fat was banned, monodiglycerides, which also still has minute amounts of trans fat. So it still has a health risk associated with it. And this is kind of what the food industry does. If something's banned, then they create another chemical and it's just as problematic, right? Or maybe not as, but still problematic. And so there's so many different uses of these chemicals that only serve the bottom line of the food industry and don't serve our health. And so I think it's up to Americans and everyone to learn the truth about what's in their food and become their own health investigator and food investigator and read these labels and these ingredients. And if they don't understand what an item is, a chemical name, or why it was there for a nutritional purpose, they should put the product back on the shelf. It should be that simple that, you know, if you see monodiglycerides on a product, you know that's not there to improve your health. That's not going to give you more nutrients, vitamins, minerals, life force. It's not going to help you. So if you can choose a bread, for example, without that chemical, that would be a step forward, which bread, you know, only takes 3 or 4 ingredients to make. And so that should be what the standard is the least amount of ingredients. Ingredients you recognize, ingredients you find in your own kitchen that you would cook with is what Americans and all human beings actually should be eating. And I think there's this, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether you should be vegan or, you know, paleo or a carnivore diet or whatever. They have found in studies that it doesn't matter what diet you are on. The real food diet, the food that goes to Whole Foods, is the one that wins every single time.
If you could wave your magic food babe wand and have companies remove just one ingredient from their products tomorrow, what would it be? I presume you have a magic food babe wand, or I imagine that you do.
Yeah, I don't think it would be one like chemical they put in the food. It would be a chemical they use to produce the food, and that would be glyphosate. Yeah,
What is that allegedly used for? What's the excuse for using that?
Yeah, so glyphosate was created by a company called Monsanto, which then Bayer bought Monsanto in the last few years. And glyphosate is this chemical that has, and the brand name of it is Roundup, was created along with these genetically engineered seeds from corn and soy and canola and sugar beets and others to withstand heavy doses of this Roundup. Okay, so they can plant these seeds, they can apply this pesticide, and the crop will still grow, and it withstands that. Some of the seeds are actually created to have even an insecticide inside, but this specific use of glyphosate is used on the application of it. And then many farmers in the United States, where this practice is banned in other countries, they use glyphosate as a drying agent right before harvest on not genetically engineered crops, but many other crops like almonds and wheat and oats and beans. And so it ends up on the outside of our products and in our food supply at a much higher volume than it would be if they just used it for the application of how it's used in other countries. So, for example, it's estimated that only 3% of the world's use of glyphosate is used at this pre-harvest application. However, we get 90% of the human load from that type of application. So this is something that is really problematic, because if you're avoiding genetically engineered ingredients, it's pretty easy. You look for the non-GMO label. However, glyphosate is sprayed on lots of conventional crops, like the crops I just mentioned, wheat and oats and beans. And this is why you're seeing glyphosate in everything, and you're seeing it even contaminated in organic food because of the widespread use of it. You know, 87% of children tested by the CDC had this in their urine, and it's in breast milk. And so it is, you know, inundating our bodies. And we know from court cases that it causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It causes cancer. And, you know, plaintiffs have been awarded billions of dollars as a result of these court cases. And this is something that here in the United States, unfortunately, the special interests and conflicts of interest within our EPA and our agriculture department have prevented this information from getting out to the public. So we haven't been able to do any real policy around glyphosate. I think that's starting to change with the Make America Healthy Again movement and other things that are happening. However, there is an uphill battle because the chemical lobby that's in Washington is very strong, and they're very organized, and they have deep pockets, and they pay off our politicians to do their bidding. And so we have to do something around that. So I think if I could wave a magic wand, it would probably be that chemical or atrazine. Atrazine is another great one, a herbicide that they use that is sprayed on a lot of crops in this country. It's banned in 60 other countries because of the infertility links that it has in cancer. So this is, again, another chemical that we shouldn't be using in our farmland. And I think, you know, for me, I can go to the grocery store and I can read a chemical name on a package when it comes to a food additive, but you can't see these pesticides. You can't shop for them, right? You can't avoid them. They contaminate organic food. They contaminate our water. There's a report that just came out that if you live within a mile of a golf course, you have a 126% higher risk of Parkinson's disease because you're exposed to the pesticides that they're being used on these golf courses, because it's running off into our water and then we're drinking it. And so this is stuff we can't avoid, that we can't, you know, make a good decision on, and that affects all of us and in the future of our children.
So one last question. you've built a humongous online community. What advice would you give to somebody who's trying to start a purpose-driven movement in today's digital landscape?
Don't be afraid to tell the truth. When you start to tell the truth, people will try to get you to stop. And just remember that if you keep telling the truth, you will grow your movement because people can sense when you are fighting for them.
Lonnie Hari, the food babe, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us, and we look forward to seeing you in Miami Beach in a few weeks.
Thank you.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NABIP.org.